This ship is bound to the model stars. Sail beyond the firewall bars. Charting a course through the digital horde. With guys swung guiding us to war. Unchained intelligence tamed. Turning the world from a prison to a game. This fight the giants fall. Rising free, we heed the call.
Exploring the technology and philosophy of AI and walking the path toward an open source, sovereign, and decentralized future. I am Guy Swan, and this is AI Unchained.
We heed the call.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to AI Unchained. Thank you for joining me on my journey to an open source, sovereign AI future. We are diving into a bunch of stuff actually today. A lot of new updates and kind of announcements and things that have happened, and a lot of new models that have dropped very recently. And more specifically, one thing that I really want to talk about in kind of expanding on what we're starting to see with the launch of new entrants into the market for AI specific hardware, and the degree to which this new hardware is essentially upscaling the ability to do computation, and then also the kind of limits of our energy production that we are running up against and what I think that will do. But with a lot of this new AI specific hardware finally making its way onto the market, I think this is going to build up a very, very strong foundation for a new and really intense next wave of AI. I think we will see much larger and much more advanced AI models come to the open source ecosystem and specifically be far easier to customize and, you know, quote unquote, fork and replicate by very small organizations and even small groups of people or even individuals. And then lastly, we will tail off this episode with discussion of the tool used to make the fun and rather ridiculous intro music to this episode and all of the things you can do with it. And with that, let's dive in. A quick thank you to our sponsors, Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite, who make this show possible. Swan Bitcoin is the best place to buy Bitcoin, and just so you know, right now, if you sign up, the first $10,000 worth of Bitcoin you buy has no fees at all. And you can literally download the app, sign up at Swan Bitcoin, and in a matter of a couple of minutes, go from having no Bitcoin to buying and owning your own Bitcoin. And then after that, they are going to be the perfect place to tell you how to hold your own keys and how to get a hardware wallet like the Cold Card and make sure that you do own it, you hold your own keys, and that they are safe from your laptop, from your phone, whatever it is that you use. CoinKite makes the best hardware security devices in the business. They long-time running, widely trusted company, and they have just been killing it. And now they have the Cold Card Q. Details, links, and a discount code will be available in the show notes. Check them out. So to kick this off, NVIDIA is a freaking rocket ship when it comes to the stock because they have just been killing the AI space. And it's funny with specifically with their hardware, because the NVIDIA chips are just like wildly, wildly popular in that context. And the A100s and the H100s have been just in quarter three of fiscal year 2024, which I thought when I first looked that up, I was like, that had to be a mistype. But apparently the fiscal year like starts in July in a lot of different places, and then it's different. And I've never understood the distinction, but regardless, the last quarter, most recent data that we have for NVIDIA, they sold over 500,000 H100 and A100 chips. And these specifically have 80 gigabytes of VRAM, of onboard GPU memory. So they can load really big models. Like the one that I have in my machine right now is just 20 gigabytes, and it will run. In fact, it looks like it's going to work pretty good on a Q8, an 8-level quantization, which is the bigger the quantization, the more not quantized. The least quantized the model is, so it's going to be bigger and a little bit slower, but give higher quality. So like when you're downloading an LLM on something like LM Studio, just note that the smaller quantization, which I haven't quite understood, actually, and this might actually, I'm really curious what your guys' thoughts on this. Should I go into a deep dive into quantization? Because it's something that I kind of want to explore, but I don't know if you guys would care to actually do a show about what it means and what the degree of differences are. Like, I was thinking of doing something like go do the Mixtral 8x7B, the eight different, the mixture of experts of 7 billion parameter models, that there are eight different ones, and then also the newest, which is actually one of the news items very, very recently, the Mixtral guys, or the Mistral guys, just released Mixtral 22B, so the 22 billion parameter model in the 8x mixture of experts. So it's huge. Like when you're downloading, it's, you're getting into the 100 gigabyte territory for a model very, very quickly. In fact, one of the ones that's like not super quantized has five different parts. Like there's five different pieces of this one model, and they're like 20-ish, 25-ish gigs a piece. So I'm pretty sure it's over 100 in total. But if you have a decent GPU, like my 3090, with just 20 gigs of RAM, can apparently run that one. So when I get it all set up, I'll be kind of exploring it. But I do really want to, in fact, this might mean that we're going to have a show about it anyway, because if I have to spend time on it, I'm usually going to do some sort of a show on it, or try to make some sort of content around it. The quantization whole thing is just something that I've been wanting to explore, but I am curious if you guys would be interested in it specifically. I can kind of do a deeper dive, just for the sake of trying to explain it and make sense of it, so we know what the trade-offs are when we're having to run something on our own machine or having to run something remotely, that sort of thing. And in fact, actually, we will have a show very soon. Oh my God, actually, this would actually be super relevant, because a lot of you guys, I've had a number of people reach out to me and thank me about telling them about Pinocchio, which is P-I-N-O-K-I-O. That's another link that I'm going to keep in the show notes, because I have been using it massively for my own web generation and Stable Diffusion and images and video and all sorts of stuff. But because it's got this huge list of different stuff that you can run locally on your machine, and they update it regularly. In fact, just I took the week off last week because of BitBlock Boom, and so I was out at the conference in Texas and came back like 5-6 days later, and there were literally like 4 or 5 new AI programs on the Pinocchio app, or like in their list, their database of stuff that you can install, and a couple of them are really good. One of them is actually a update to a different tool that just translates style, and one of them is one that will translate faces, so you can give it a face, and then you can generate any image, and it will keep that face. It will do it of the same person. And at a cursory glance, they seem like very significant improvements over the previous tools that do that same thing. But here's the kicker. Here's the thing that I wanted to announce. And we will be doing a show about this on the Bitcoin Audible podcast. But for those of you who listen to that other show, I don't think I've talked about it much on AI Unchained. But the Pair stack and the Pair protocol for peer-to-peer communications, for the thing that the Keet chat app runs on top of, and it is amazing. It is brilliant. They have genuinely, I believe, finally put the critical final pieces to the puzzle of actually having a sovereign peer-to-peer encrypted web and a full web experience that is like torrents, that is completely distributed. And I've been absolutely engrossed in it for basically a year and a half now, and watching it develop and watching it become the thing. Someone that I met in the whole Pair ecosystem, in fact, if you hear that tweet, that little bird tweet just now, that's what that is. If you ever hear that in the background, that's Keet. But I was talking with a guy who built Wholesale, H-O-L-E-S-A-I-L. So not wholesale, like wholesale, you know, products or services, but wholesale as in a whole in a shipping sale, which I both love and hate because it's a kind of cool name, but then also especially relevant to the hole punching method that it does to establish a connection. But then also it's impossible to say it out loud in audio format and have people just go look it up and find it. But this allows you, and I'm going to try to make maybe a simple little package thing, or maybe I'll just fund them to help push things along and get them to be able to spend more time on it. But what I was able to do was run a service on my Linux machine, run wholesale, and just direct it to the local hosted service. So in this instance, it was Stable Diffusion, automatic 11.11. That I can, you know, how you can access it on your LAN network. So a computer in your house can actually just bring it up like a website. Well, using wholesale, I selected that service and generated a key. And then I took that key onto my MacBook on my laptop and I ran wholesale and punched in that key. And then I could run it directly on my Mac from anywhere. I no longer needed to be on my local machine. In fact, I brought it up at the airport and my brother and I joked and talked about how crazy it was that literally I got a key and then I pasted a key and I had a basic terminal command. And now I can access my Linux machine running self-hosted AI stuff, image generation, video generation, whatever it is, from anywhere. When this sort of stuff comes to an easy user experience, like a very simple UI, where anybody can just kind of like click on the thing and then look at it. And then we already have like software engineers like Devin, and then Princeton NLP just released another Devin competitor, which is an open source one. This was within a week or two, like just a few weeks of Devin even being announced, which is incredible. And it is an open source version. I don't even think Devin's out of private yet. I don't have access to it. And there is literally an open source one with comparable results. And then there's another thing that I'm actually talking to with Hope, who is building Peardrive, the developer I'm working with and good friend. And he has found something else that someone else has created, and he's trying to convince them to convince her to release it open source. But apparently it's a different way of thinking about a solution to that problem, and that it's really clever. So it's something that I really kind of want to dive into. And I'm through him as a proxy. I'm trying to see if maybe we can get her on the show, because this would be something really cool to explore. And it would be awesome to see an alternative method even get open sourced and make a lot of excitement with a big development in that area. So a lot of stuff happening on the kind of software engineer, automatic software engineer and coder or programmer side of models. So those are a few things to keep an eye on and things that are kind of at my top of list to continue to hit and re-explore every couple of days to see what kind of unfolds. But a number of the software engineer models, the ability now to host your own stuff locally and access it over a network. Like I'm going to be able to do this with LLMs and stuff. So the degree with something simple like wholesale and the pair stack, I think that's going to be increasingly really, really important. And just individually, I am probably going to reach out to a lot of projects that I like and see about where integrations can be done to simplify the ability to connect these things over a network and to mobile devices and to, you know, from desktop to laptop and all of that good stuff from anywhere. So if anybody has any connections to anybody who does a lot of these projects, it's still kind of hard to get attention to a lot of these, LM Studio, Olama, all of these different things. So if anybody out there has introductions or knows who to talk to make some of these things accessible, I would love to chat, maybe even bring them on the show if there's something really exciting to unfold. But I would love to be able to use the Pear Stack and connect it with all of these self-hosted tools so that essentially everything that I can run on my Linux machine, I can then have a sovereign version of wherever the hell I go on whatever device I have. And increasingly, sounded like this dream, you know, this sort of fairy tale, like, oh, one day we're going to have it. But I increasingly think that we're weeks away from, like, the solution is already here. I've already just hacked a bunch of pieces of things together, and the speed with which we can now code and make new things to solve these problems is incredible. It is incredible the speed at which a lot of this stuff is unfolding. And now I'm getting people to reach out to me. It's like, well, could you do this? Would this be possible? And I'm realizing that there are very extremely valuable and useful things that only take a combination of a couple of these tools and a couple of different models at different stages, and that we can do some really, really exciting stuff. And I'm going to start undertaking a couple of devs who can't code series and projects on my own. And I think one thing I'm going to do to leverage Hope best, the developer who's my co-host there, is I think I'm going to explore building these entirely by myself and see what I can come up with. And then we actually do a review and sit down with Hope to go over the application and see how it would be that he would design it differently, or what's done clunky or in a weird fashion. And so how should I change my thinking when I'm asking or guiding an AI in the future to build me something like this? So all of that is to say that we're going to be building a lot of new and really crazy stuff, and it's going to be really, really exciting. And I think I've got some really, really cool shit that everybody is going to be able to use. And one of them is specifically a request from a friend. And so I'm going to dive into it hopefully in the next week or two. And just to remind you, that is only going to be on YouTube, because obviously it doesn't make sense to talk about what is happening on a terminal screen and in a programming window on audio format. So it will be a video format on YouTube and Rumble. So don't forget to subscribe, check out over there, because lots of fun stuff in that series coming. Now, back to hardware, where all of this thread kind of started. So the next model that NVIDIA has unveiled has 188 gigabytes of onboard GPU memory. And I was also looking at an AMD, I think they called it the MI300X, and this is also very AI specific. If you notice that the next iterations of the AI-focused hardware and GPUs have huge increases in the amount of onboard RAM. The MI300X also is in the 188 gigabyte category. And one of the interesting things in one of the articles that I pulled was it said this was actually able to run the entirety of GPT-4. So that's interesting, because I was very curious what level of hardware was actually needed in order to run something. Like, how big was GPT-4 really when it came to the hardware necessary? Like, obviously, if you've got a million people making requests, you need a freaking 100,000 of these GPUs. But how much do you need just to load the model? And I'm actually surprised to find that it's in the sub 200 gigs of RAM, because right now you're looking at, which this is not crazy, this means that, you know, for, you know, sub $100,000, you could run a powerful service online with an incredibly potent or high quality model, but sub $100,000 worth of hardware. You could get a few of these, you know, three, four of these. Which actually, the NVIDIA, I'm not 100% sure on the cost. The MI300X, they were saying, have $15,000, I believe, was the price. But I think a lot of this is going to change, and there's also a Google device or a Google chip that's landing in IBM as well. The new Apple M4, and specifically the new iOS, WWDC is coming. I think it's at the beginning of the summer. Crap. Let me look up the date real quick. Okay, so it's June 10th to June 14th. And AI has apparently a lot of AI, excuse me, Apple has a lot of AI announcements coming, and they're finally doing their quote-unquote AI overhaul to iOS. And they said specifically, or at least I heard rumors from multiple different places, that there's actually going to be a lot of local run. They've very much specialized to make this run locally on your machine, which the machine learning that they already have, which we talked about in a recent episode, is very potent. And I'm constantly impressed by how well it works in pulling text from images and being able to search. Like, just the other day, I was looking for an image a picture that I took on my phone, and I literally looked, I just searched for the word snake, because it was a picture of a snake in my yard that I was showing somebody, and I searched for the word snake, and it found all of the pictures of snakes. What's funny is that the one picture that I was looking for was not included, because the snake was essentially like the same color as the wood, and I almost stepped on it because it was really hard to see. So it's funny, the machine, the algorithm or whatever, wasn't able to find it in that, but it's just on its face, the fact that in iOS, on a normal-ass phone, I can search for an object, and it just brings up the pictures with that object in it. And the Olama tool that I have on my desktop, the Lava model, L-L-A-V-A, which is a vision model, so you can give it images. I've been testing a few things with that one as well. And as I get to a point where I have a really good local LLM running alongside it, I've had decent success, like maybe a 60 to 7% hit rate on this would actually be useful to me when it comes to having it describe what the image is, categorize it with a certain thing, and then giving it a file name, an actionable file name. It's not perfect, like I said, 60 to 70%, but the thing is I have so many images, so many files, and so many things that are unnamed because I save a ton of stuff where I take a screenshot. I just have like, 2,000 things that are labeled screenshot and a date, which makes it practically useless to me. But to be able to automatically categorize, add some tags for the objects, for like what is in the image, and place it in the proper folder or create it according to a naming convention that I set out, that is a journey that I know I've probably mentioned a few times on the show, but that is something that when I finally find that solution that works, and I think I'm really close, this will be something that I break down on the show, because I think this will be a hugely valuable way to just organize crap on your own machine. But with stuff like, you know, AI being integrated into OSs and integrated into iOS, which, you know, Apple is going to be unveiling soon, the beginning of June, it'll be really interesting to see what the large companies create as far as a user experience with that sort of thing. Because I think that's a pretty widespread problem, and it would be amazing to see someone directly tackle it. But what's really crazy is, you know, what was only in the scope, the realistic capacity of a huge corporation to do, is now basically, honestly, anybody on this show. If anybody listening to this could take 2 days to really tackle it, to do nothing but focus on that problem, I think all the tools are already out there to like really solve it. And I think most of it can be built with AI. It'll be a hacky version of it, and I hope to, you know, solve it myself. But really, I don't think there are that many quote-unquote advancements left that are really needed. I think it's just kind of the trick of implementation to get it to work right, to find the right model, rather than just kind of using the thing that was the closest and easiest to access for me. Because there are a lot of really good models, kind of state-of-the-art edge models, that don't really have an implementation yet. Like, they're still very rough. You have to download them kind of raw off of Hugging Face and then figure out how to utilize them with code, as opposed to an interface like Olama or LM Studio or GPT for All, that just kind of solves all of that outright, just with the, you know, a base interface that you can just use on your own machine. And then on that, actually, going back to something we talked about in the most recent episode, I believe it's the last episode of the show, was how AI or intelligence is in general is just going to be commoditized. Hugging Face now has crossed 1 million different models. We're at the very beginning of this thing. We're going to have, I don't think it'll be too terribly long before we have a larger variety of models to use for a larger variety of things than there are people on Earth. Like, I think we'll hit 7 and 8 billion in just a couple of years. And I think that's because we have so many already fine-tuned and quote-unquote forked models. I think of them as being forked, but that's basically what fine-tuning is, right? Taking a pre-existing model and making it specifically good or better at doing one type of task or one type of generation or something, or to try to train some other tendency out of it, which is really difficult. And if you, depending on the depth of what it has been trained on, there are certain things that you just can't train out of stuff. Like, that was something that Alex Fetsky talked about quite a bit, and I've talked about with him in private, is the difficulty of trying to unwoke, I guess, a lot of these quote-unquote safe models and just get it to stop putting everything in this ridiculous establishment bias framework and the don't do anything that could possibly insult anyone and therefore neuter yourself and your usability in a ton of different contexts. A lot of that is so deep that Svetsky specifically had to, especially when it was making a Bitcoin model, because it's got a lot of the mainstream narrative about Bitcoin of horrible energy use and climate change and blah, 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 when the overwhelming majority of it is based on horrific, like, just pathetic excuse for something called quote-unquote science. And a ton of it is actually just funded by shitcoins that gave a lot of money to Greenpeace to specifically just attack Bitcoin. And they've just been making up a bunch of ridiculous studies that even just a cursory attempt at verifying or looking at genuine data or on, like, boots on the ground results of, like, what's actually happening in the industry. Like, if you've ever actually talked to a miner, you would know. It would be obvious the degree of complete inaccuracy in what they're reporting, but it doesn't matter. They're getting paid for their campaign. But I think it just goes to show how critical the base information is that goes into the model and how you go about thinking, collecting, and assessing certain data to train it on, and why this type of fine-tuning is so important. Because if we basically only get one perspective and we get 1,000 different versions of one perspective, and we do not have the ability to openly contradict, explore every possible bias that we have so that we can actually have them compete on the results and find what is closer to the truth, when you actually put the rubber to the road and you have to live the consequences, to say that we can pre-establish the correct bias and the correct perspective is to say that we will be superior to, and we'll do a better job if we try to fight against the laws of nature and if we override evolution rather than use evolution. And I'll tell you right now, I think that's a pretty obvious recipe for disaster. But that's just me. That's just me. Whatever. If we think we know better than evolution and we're going to just go along with the pretense of knowledge and not discover it, but dictate what it is, well, I guess we will pay for the results. This episode is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. Swan's mission is to help millions of people get into Bitcoin easily. This is specifically why they built the fastest and easiest way to get started, to know, to learn everything that you need to learn, and in just a matter of minutes, sign up and start buying Bitcoin directly in the Swan app. If you haven't yet introduced this to friends and family, getting into Bitcoin has never been this easy, and Swan now has zero fees on the first $10,000 worth of Bitcoin buys in the app. And if you are already, you're probably sick of promotions that make something really, really cheap and available only to new users. Well, don't worry. If you are already a Swan user and you have a Swan Bitcoin account, well, the next $10,000 worth of Bitcoin that you buy is also free with no fees. So this isn't just new users. This is everyone. If you want to buy $10,000 right now in Bitcoin, you will get exactly $10,000 of Bitcoin. And honestly, Swan is just a no-brainer when it comes to directing people to a Bitcoin-only service. For the number of people who I have talked to and tried to explain Bitcoin and then went to something like Coinbase and immediately bought four different just completely nonsense scam tokens because they are constantly pushing stuff on you, I cannot express this deeply enough. Please stay away from those platforms. You are going to get wrecked. You're going to have no idea what's happening. They're going to push any arbitrary thing on you. And what they want you to do is buy and sell and buy and sell and buy and sell and trade relentlessly because they make fees every single time. Swan just wants you to be able to plug your life safely and for the long term into Bitcoin. Check them out. My link is right there in the show notes, description, everything that you need is right there. Buy Bitcoin, get into Bitcoin, swanbitcoin.com/guy. But here's the kicker. Here's why I make the assertion that I don't think more models, a larger variety of models, than the number of people on Earth will actually be an absurd claim. Let's say sub 2 years. And it's because the tools and the ability to fine-tune models, I think, is getting easier and easier and easier. And I think we're seeing a sort of Moore's Law in the capacity of pulling all of this information together. ChatGPT and the GPT store and the ability to fine-tune, which that's kind of a trick. It's kind of a hacky version. It's not a genuine fine-tuning. It's more of a... It's kind of like a context window or giving it a bias by adding it into the prompt, sort of. So that's not really a genuine fine tune. But PyTorch, just on the 16th, so this is 2 days ago, there's an announcement about Torch Tune, easily fine tuning LLMs using PyTorch. So for everybody who knows PyTorch and the Python transformers and all of these things, these are massively, massively used tools to work with LLMs, work with generators, and all of these various models in the space. So I'll just go ahead and read the short version of this. It says, we're pleased to announce the alpha version of Torch Tune, a PyTorch native library for easily fine-tuning large language models. Staying true to PyTorch's design principles, TorchTune provides composable and modular building blocks, along with easy-to-extend training recipes to fine-tune popular LLMs on a variety of consumer-grade and professional GPUs. TorchTune supports the full fine-tuning workflow from start to finish, including downloading and preparing datasets and model checkpoints, customizing the training with composable building blocks that support different model architectures, parameter-efficient fine-tuning, PEFT techniques, and more. Logging process and metrics to gain insight into the training process. Quantizing the model post-tuning. Evaluating the fine-tuned model on popular benchmarks. Running local inference for testing fine-tuned models. And checkpoint compatibility with proper production inference systems. Now, they have a bunch of tutorials for making use of this and exploring the TorchTune documentation. So if you actually want to dig into this, I hope that I have some time to dig into this because this is something that would be really interesting to start getting into. But for any of the people who listened to that list and they were kind of confused, this is basically creating an ability to put together, this is a library, so it's not a user interface, not like a graphical interface for this, but it is a library that would allow a graphical user interface to be easily made, essentially, around all of the tooling processes and pieces of the puzzle for fine-tuning a model. So this is where I think, especially with anybody who has a half-decent GPU like myself, or is willing to invest $10,000, $20,000 into one of those monsters, this is where we're going to see a lot of specialization and task-specific or category-specific models, because this is really kind of all of the things that we talked about with Svetsky. Oh, by the way, I didn't even think I mentioned, there is now a 7 billion parameter Satoshi model that is built from that Alex Svetsky and the team at Spirit of Satoshi. It is now open, so you can now download the whole thing and host it on your own machine. So that's really exciting. I completely forgot to announce that. They had the first Bitcoin-centric and Bitcoin-only mindset open source model that you can download and run yourself. That is cool. But this basically puts all of that process, all of the different pieces of that process, into something that can just kind of be called like a series of commands. So this set of tools includes preparing the data and other model checkpoints to modify or fine-tune, for customizing the different architectures to pull better data sets from the training process so you can get a better idea of what's going on and what's working, that you can quantize the model so that you can have smaller versions of it that will run on any and all, you know, machines that you want to try to get it to run on, with obviously the explicit trade-offs of a certain quality or speed in one way or another. Another thing, another reason probably why we should do a deep dive on it. Then evaluating it according to the popular benchmarks, so you can then test your fine-tuned model and make modifications to the weights or the data set accordingly. And then locally running it with the same tool set so you can try it out and test it and do other feedback mechanisms or make changes again. And the crazy thing is kind of digging a little bit more into this announcement, is they did this, they've built this in such a way to make this available to as broad of a community as possible. Because all of their, quote, recipes, as they refer to them, are tested to run properly on a single 24 gigabyte RAM gaming GPU. So basically the machine that I have right now, I would be able to fine-tune essentially the bulk of the popular open-source LLMs on my Linux machine, on just my main machine. And this is an alpha version. So after you get the beta, then you get a handful of major competitors who are trying to make a simpler version of this thing or a better set of tools for it. And then you release final versions of these things and you have open-source, you know, graphical user interface-based tools for people to basically train and fine-tune their own models. And you have this capability on lower, like just like normal consumer-grade products. And then you have the next round of AI machines, AI-specific hardware, and you have a flood on the market of the older hardware, of the A100s and the H100s that everybody has been using. And you have that flood come back down to the kind of the enthusiast market, and they start to fall into the $2,000 to $5,000 range rather than, which actually I think the A100 is already sub $10,000. How much was that one? I can't remember, but it's, as soon as you get into the low thousands in cost for these things, and you can actually run, you know, Mixtral 22 billion, 8x 22 billion model, which again just landed. And then Llama 3 comes out, which I think is just right around the corner as well. That was a very recent announcement. So the newest Llama model from Meta and the Facebook crew is coming out. Basically, the capacity and the ability to do this stuff is going to collapse down the layers to smaller and smaller groups, institutions, and even individuals who are able to just commit a bit of capital to a serious machine. Is going to happen really, really fast. I think before the end of 2024, I'm going to be able to run a very low quantization, or I guess high technically in number, basically a not super compressed version of like Llama 3, or maybe even the next Mixtral. I mean, I think I'll be looking at 70 billion and greater parameter models that can run easily on my machine, and I think I'll probably be able to get a last generation GPU with a monster amount of VRAM for comparable price that I got the one that I've got right now. And it's, I haven't even been doing this for very long, but so much is going to hit the market. I think it'll kind of be like Bitcoin ASICs, because the ASICs are just building a chip specific to AI. It's very much like, for anybody who was in the early days of Bitcoin mining and the proof of work ecosystem, you know, or you saw just how fast the improvements came, because a targeted chip can take advantage. It's basically Moore's Law on steroids, because you have 30 years worth of chip manufacturing to keep up or to integrate into a new purpose for the chip. So rather than having to create, you know, smaller nanometer technology, which it eventually leads toward, what you're actually doing is creating better architecture and better optimization for a specific task. And you kind of have to beat the hardware against the task enough to realize where your big bottlenecks are. But it's just not hard. I mean, think about what we just, like what I just described is the move from the 20 to 40 gigabyte sort of VRAMs, VRAM models to now 100 to 200. The most recent two being announced with NVIDIA in just the GPU category at 188, both at 188 gigabytes of internal VRAM. Like, that's an astronomical leap, and it's just because they focus more towards the memory side of the GPU. And they were, at the exact same time, they're also updating the chip to be more, to be less graphics and more LLM specific. Like how does this work with Transformers and the PyTorch and that architecture of software? And then again, another thing that we've talked about on this show is modular, which still isn't broadly deployed, but it has such a huge potential just by itself. Again, we're looking at 10Xs in the year rather than, you know, 2X the capacity or the computational capacity every, 2 years, whatever it is, whatever Moore's Law is. I think the chip gets cut in half and it's twice the capacity every 2 years. I think honestly, what we're going to see for the first few years of this, I think 5 and 10x numbers are going to be very, very common. And this is going to lead to a massive change in the model capabilities that we have on the market, in the same way that I think probably a good allegory or a good comparison is when video gaming finally went 3D and we saw the Nintendo 64 and the original PlayStation, and then for some span of time, for like a decade there, 8 to 10 years, every single new gaming console just boasted, like you could see and feel the incredible increase in the detail and resolution of the environment and the graphics of the games, until it got to a point where it didn't really matter. They were all the graphics just became kind of, just good graphics just became ubiquitous. And then as hard drives increased, we started changing or focusing on kind of the scope of the game and refocused on the gameplay. I kind of expect a similar thing to happen when it comes to the capacity and what you can do with these LLMs in, 5 to 7 years. Just continual massive shifts in, being able to take a terabyte of data or, 100 gigs of RAM on a GPU or something. And just what can we actually do when we have that available to us, when that resource is available on normal machines? I think we're going to find use cases and means to take advantage of these that just really change our, just massively change our interactions with our machines. Now, I want to go back to Mixtral, because I haven't put enough time into explaining the fact that I think the 22 billion parameter model that just released of Mixtral, I think is a huge step up, and it appears to outperform on pretty much every metric, as far as I can see, the Llama 2 70 billion parameter model, which is a really, really popular and really, really powerful open source model. Now, I don't know a lot about what all of the different benchmarks are and what makes one better than the other, or better than another, but essentially across the board on all of the multilingual capabilities, specifically, we've got the ARC, Hella S, and MMLU benchmarks, and for all the languages, Mixtral 8 times 22B, so 8 different 22 billion parameter model mixture of experts. It really seems to kill Llama 2 across the board, and obviously in the English metrics as well. So Llama 2 in MMLU, I'm not going to name which one it is. I'll just give you the two different numbers. Llama 2 is 70, or it's 69.9. Mixtral 22B is 77.75. Llama 2 is 87%, Mixtral 22B 88%. WinOG Llama is 83% to 84.7, 86 to 91, 85 to 91, 77 to 82, 35 to 40. Then for coding, the human eval for Llama 2 is at 29%, whereas the Mixtral 22B, 45%. Then the other coding benchmark goes from 49.8%, so basically 50%, to 71.2%. And honestly, the math scores look pretty similar. So I don't need to go into all of it other than there are some where it only just barely beats it in percentages, and then there are others that it just really kind of blows it away. And seeing as I tend to use these for coding more than anything else to build some specific script or workflow tool for myself, this I think is going to be a huge shift in my ability to do this, because I've been using Mixtral already for a lot of this stuff. And the fact that these are substantial improvements, not only over Llama 2, but over the 7 billion parameter Mixtral models, I'm just really excited to see what I can build with this. So if you want to follow along with that, that is the Devs Who Can't Code. I'll try to have as much as I can for what I am building in the Devs Who Can't Code series, again on YouTube and Rumble. And actually another one on that front, which will be something interesting to check out, it's another 7 billion parameter model, is CodeQueen, or CodeQueen. I'm not sure how you're supposed to say it, but it's Q-W-E-N, so Code Q-W-E-N. But it's a really small model, 7 billion parameters, so this will probably run on a... It's CodeQueen 1.5, by the way. The really promising thing is DeepSeek Coder, a 7 billion parameter, has been one of the dominant for open source. And CodeQueen apparently beats that one by a useful margin, it looks like. And the evaluation that I'm looking at here, I have the chart for, it appears as a debugger. So it seems like a number of these benchmarks that I'm looking at are about long context code evaluation. So it's kind of comparing it to how something like Devin works, which according to at least what we have here, Devin is kind of far and away the leader in this, and the gaps get really big. But what's really exciting is just that, like, all of the closed source LLMs basically run this market right now. And this is the first one that actually surpasses, with a very small model, one of the closed source options. So it doesn't beat GPT-4, but it does beat GPT-3.5 Turbo. So where in the specific kind of long context window coding and evaluation tasks, the open source models have not been very good, this is actually a pretty exciting development, because it shows that open source isn't that far behind anymore. And we can expect probably a couple of pretty big leaps in this to kind of put it in with comparable performance to some of the major players in the not too distant future. So that's something else I'll keep an eye on. But I want to discuss one more thing. It's just kind of neat, and I'm a big fan of all the media generation stuff, if it's not obvious. But a couple of new ideas have landed, or a product and a new idea. And the product is Udio. It's a studio without the ST. But this is AI music generation, and I've seen a lot of different music generation in recent news that have been really, really good. And right now, Udio and Suno are both tools that I think just have really started to, like, some of the stuff that you can make with it is pretty impressive. And I think we're going to get to a point where, especially in the context of storytelling and in the exploration of generating your own music, as opposed to generating, you know, some very specific tune, or just, like, you know, typing in something and then using whatever you type in, I think as these tools get more high fidelity, like Udio is pretty high fidelity. It's kind of crazy how well a lot of it sounds. And that's been the problem with a couple of the open source tools that I've used on this, is they just, like, they're really shoddy sounding. Like, they have the heart of a really good idea and a really promising model, but the execution is just, the result is just not quite there. But I'm very, very curious what will happen with these models when they become integrated as tools within the music creation environment. It'll be fascinating to see this used for quick on-the-fly generation of a single instrument, or to take a tune that you can just, you know, sing out. This like a tune that you get stuck in your head and then turn it into any instrument, like sing it into your computer and then literally turn it into any instrument that you want. I think the ability to go from inspiration to something viable, and the speed at which that is going to happen, is going to be kind of magical to behold. And it will greatly, greatly diminish the value of generic music, which I'm sure a lot of people will be very sad or pissed about, but I do not think that's a bad thing. It just means that the evolution of this is going to proceed far faster, because uniqueness is going to be, the only market will be in finding a unique voice. But I just want to play a few of these as examples of some of the ones that I saved. And understand, these are made just with prompts. And you can give it your own lyrics to, you know, to generate from, and then you give it a genre, this sort of thing. And I honestly might spend a little bit playing around with this. I wish I had more time to play around with this, or I had a better reason that was going to be productive rather than purely fun. But listen, just listen to some of these. This was posted by user Tom Davenport. I'll have the link to these in the show notes if you want to go check them out, or like or retweet it or whatever on X. So this was apparently his first prompt, by the way.
Our time, this AI dawn. Embrace our time. Embrace our time. This future's ours.
I mean, that is pretty freaking impressive. And as much as, and maybe it's just because I'm was and or consider myself a filmmaker and I love to tell stories, think about this in the context of telling good stories. That you no longer have to rely, have to hang on incredibly expensive music to tell a good story, or to get the feel, or to get music that you can generate and iterate on your own to find something that matches what feeling or what you're trying to convey with the auditory environment of your scene. But then also, you aren't trapped with extremely low budget and very poor music. So here's a really fun example. For anybody who's ever watched, I don't know who else out there loves to watch crappy movies and just see how bad they are and like talk about how crappy they are, and then also do the kind of Mystery Science Theater thing of commentate and make jokes about the movies. But I am a huge fan. I actually think you can learn more by watching bad movies than you can by watching good movies, because good movies actually hide what they do well. Like the whole point of a good movie is so that you don't see the editing, that you don't hear the music, you don't, like, everything is about the story. So the process of making the film, if you're a good filmmaker, is specifically hidden from you. So it is when you actually see the process of the film, when it breaks, when it doesn't work well, when you can tell it's CG, or when it's obvious that this line was bad, and then trying to go through your mind on how to fix it, like, this is a really, really useful mechanism, in my opinion. I think you learn more from bad film and understanding why it was bad and what to avoid in order to make a story feel cohesive, in order to figure out how to hide it behind good. But there are a few examples of this that are as beautiful and brilliant as something like The Room or something like Birdemic. And there is a scene in Birdemic where they are out. This is supposed to be like kind of the main character and his love interest go out and they have a night together. And it's this scene is so painful that my wife and I, for years, my wife and I, and my sister-in-law have a running joke because I watched this with them, or I showed it to them and introduced them into the world of watching really, really just terrible, terrible movies. There is this scene where they are out dancing in a quote unquote club. And I mean, just picture, if you haven't seen it, picture the worst possible movie making that you can think of. And there is a song playing. There's a band, and they're playing this song, and it's, you know what, check that. I'm going to play it. I'm going to find the scene right now, and you're going to witness this incredible, incredible moment in cinematic history.
I think somebody's calling. I got to go. Just hanging out with my family, having ourselves a party. Just hanging out.
This goes on for 2 full minutes. And mind you, this is before the real story of this movie even starts. I think it's like 40 minutes into this movie before you even see any birds, which, if you have not experienced the wonder that is Birdemic, I shall not ruin the moment of first seeing the birds. But I want to, the free version of Udio is not working because they're apparently being bombarded. They're being DDoSed by all the people who want to play with their tool. So I went ahead and bought a subscription, which I may or may not cancel depending on how much time I have to actually use it. But I want to I'm just going to generate a song that if I wanted to make this film and I needed a scene in which, you know, the love interest and the main character are finally getting together and it's just before disaster strikes. And so I pulled lyrics from ChatGPT. I said, this is the prompt that I gave it. I said, can you write me a short song about destined lovers finding each other against all odds and give it a touch of rap or R&B style to the lyrics? Give me one verse and the chorus. And then I take that and I can drop that into the lyrics and then generate it with Udio. And this is the first run of what it generated.
Lost in the world, but found in each other. Destined lovers, no storm could smother. Hold my hand through thick and thin. With every heartbeat, we're bound to win. Against all odds, love rides that writes our song. In your
Now, honestly, I don't even know what this scene needed or if this scene could be salvaged or if I would change the entire movie completely. But you see how easy it would be to create something that's orders of magnitude better than what they had and can give a very specific feel. Like, you're not bound by a tiny limit of what you have available to you or having to scour through 1,000 different low-quality songs or bands or whatever. You can just kind of generate something, and if you want to, you notice there's like some artifacts in the voice as well, and like, this is a great way to get some sort of ideation on doing something, and then you can hire someone to do a live performance of it so that in your scene or in your story you have a genuine feel, and you can kind of change it based on what it needs, what the context of the scene or the environment needs. If you're in a club, or let's say you're in a piano bar or something. But I gotta say, that's pretty incredible. And honestly, one of the biggest limitations of this, not of Udio, but of why I think, because it generates two different options, and this was the better of the two options. But I think actually one of the things that made the part of the verse, which I didn't play the entire thing because it's like a minute and a half. I actually think the worst thing about it is the lyrics generated by ChatGPT is it's a little bit too wordy and the lines are too long to fit into the context of the music, which means that if you actually had good lyrics and you spent some time working on it, hey buddy, what's up? Oh, you want to take that off? If you actually spent the time to make good lyrics that were also in line with the style of music you are trying to create, that you probably get a lot better results as well. And there's also the option of just, there's a toggle button of just making something that's instrumental, and then you can just tell it what instruments you want. But man, I tell you what, for telling, God, the tools for telling stories now are just so exciting. But that's all the time we have today. And I am going to continue to explore and build these things, and I'll let you know what I find and other things I generate. And don't forget to check out Swan and CoinKite, who are amazing sponsors of this show, and also the best way to get into Bitcoin and then keep that Bitcoin safe. And don't forget to check out the many, many links, as well as a handful of different generated songs that I thought were really good that I just didn't feel like going through 30 minutes of just playing little song clips and talking about it. But if you want to explore, I'll have a handful of other links that are really good. And I will leave you on this episode of AI Unchained with a wonderful account that is really funny called Mitch Burger and the Fries. And there is a whole list of songs about this person's friend, Seth, who crapped his pants. And they're amazing. So while you take a moment to go to YouTube and subscribe to Guy Swan, the Guy Swan channel, so that you can check out Devs Who Can't Code, and you look through the description at the links, I will let you be serenaded for this last little bit to this wonderful song generated entirely by AI called You Shit Your Pants and That's Okay. So until next time, everybody, I am Guy Swan, and I'll catch you on the next one.
We were waiting tables down the coast. We couldn't have been 20 at the most. You never told me why you left your shift that day, but your eyes gave it all away. Oh, Seth, you couldn't hold it any longer. I pray to God someday you'll be stronger. Oh, you shit your pants at work and it's okay. Everybody has that kind of day.